Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
The first remembrance this week is for Albert Hughes, the director of the new TV series, The Continental, from the world of John Wick, for casting a long-standing anathema in the central role of Cormac, the original manager of the fictional New York Hotel for Assassins. That's right, Albert Hughes has decided to hire none other than Mel Gibson for the part. I know. I'm as shocked as you are that anyone would do this. Look, Gibson has obviously long been excommunicado for a variety of reasons, including his anti-Semitic comments, his use of the N-word during a rant against a former girlfriend, and for making such a blatantly pro-Christian movie like The Passion of the Christ, something he has never repented for. As the fifth precept of wokeness teaches us, those who platform the forbidden ones must themselves be deplatformed, which is why we implore Peacock to deconsecrate Albert Hughes and this show before it airs tonight. But if they will not do what is right, at the very least the program should begin with an appropriately stern trigger warning for those whose delicate stomachs might turn at having to see this racist monster on screen. But a more proactive solution would be to provide viewers with an in-home blindfold and earplugs, and an on-screen warning light so they can protect themselves fully every time the Unholy One will be appearing or speaking. Now, admittedly, repeatedly putting on and taking off this protective equipment will be cumbersome and will interfere with enjoying the show. Also, we still haven't figured out how to signal them that the triggering segment is over if their eyes and ears are covered. And we do worry about seeming to culturally appropriate the reality of deaf and blind persons as a workaround for the triggering. Nevertheless, protecting themselves will at least allow our devotees to avoid the accusation that they have tainted themselves through exposure to the outcast with their own eyes and ears. If they cannot boast that they avoided the program entirely, at least they can take pride in cowering from it in silence and darkness. Do not go against us, for we are the high table of reality. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Gavin Newsom, the governor of that glorious paradise on earth, the People's Republic of California. One of the proudest moments our order ever experienced was when Governor Newsom signed Assembly Bill 1887 into law in 2016, thereby prohibiting travel to the four states at that time who were deemed to be anti-LGBT. But just as our holy acronym string only had four letters back then, and has since grown to a series of letters and symbols too numerous to count, the number of anti-acronym states has burgeoned from only four in 2016 to 26 today, after the passage of over 500 violating bills in the last 7 years. Well, the worst imaginable news came this week as Governor Newsom actually signed Senate Bill 447 into law, officially repealing the boycott and allowing state-funded travel and trade to all 50 states again. We cannot believe that the great Californiatopia has so easily abandoned our cause. Even though it might seem like the law has had no effect other than to be repeatedly violated by California officials, including Newsom himself, he went to Montana, and to drive up the cost of procurement since many suppliers were on the forbidden states list. We say do not abandon the cause. Losing 22 states in 7 years is not evidence of failure, but a reminder of how much work we have yet to do. This surrender will surely send a signal to fence-sitter states that there is now no consequence to them defecting. To reluctantly quote the Wall Street Journal, if cancel culture can die in California, it can die anywhere. And that is clearly the lesson our opponents will draw, which is why we must respond strongly against this cowardly defection by the no longer golden state and its even less shiny gold-plated leader, Gavin Newsom. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we are long overdue for giving our high praise to that international sensation and feminist masterpiece, The Barbie Movie. Never before have we seen such a brilliant encapsulation of our religion in the form of a theatrical success. The way it celebrates womanhood in all of its forms and aspirations, except, of course, motherhood. The way it doesn't just reveal the wickedness of patriarchy, but pictures for us the idyllic possibility of a robust matriarchy. The way it shows the real potential for female empowerment through the confession of paradoxical gender expectation trauma. The way it shows that women are at their best when they scheme and connive to make men war against each other so as to disenfranchise them at the crucial moment of a public policy vote. And let's not overlook the overt lampooning of the Mattel Corporation under the leadership of incompetent boobs. Excuse me, board members. And of course, let's be sure to cherish the deliberate inclusion of a transgender actress as Dr. Barbie, which also has the benefit of reminding our young people that gender is in the heart and the head, even when there's literally nothing at all between the legs. Of course, Dr. Barbie also reminds viewers that the best doctors are still those who were assigned male at birth. What a triumph of our cause. However, we do have some concerns. First, even though the movie features plus-size Barbie, this is still aspirational, as Mattel in real life has so far failed to make overweight Barbie a real product available to the children. Second, we worry that the homage to 2001 A Space Odyssey in the opening scene will not resonate with most women and invite mansplaining from their romantic partners. And third, and this is the one that really pains us, it is unrepentantly harassed. It most certainly did not escape our notice that the two leading roles were cast with naturally brunette humans who had to dye their hair blonde for this movie. Now, if it were only that these two non-blondes were thereby taking away jobs from natural blondes, that would be bad enough. But for them to so offensively put on blonde face and reinforce the long-standing anti-blonde stereotype so hurtful to the blonde community is really unforgivable. Even worse, you may not be aware that Margot Robbie, a natural brunette, has previously confessed to Elle magazine that she actually dyed her hair darker all through high school and was, quote, devastated when she had to go blonde to get more leading roles in Hollywood. So although it might seem like this movie is all liberation and inclusive house parties, there's an ugly truth hidden in the roots of its hairism, and raising the question that if even someone like Margot Robbie has to pretend to be someone else to be successful, what hope is there for the rest of us? Unfortunately, the message here couldn't be clearer. Whether it's body size or gender presentation or hair color, one still must conform to cultural expectations in order to succeed, and the rest of us must never ask whether the carpet matches the drapes or the pronouns. As a justice warrior, Barbie still has a long way to go. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
As you depart today, please be sure to donate as much as you can to the relief fund for those poor souls who spent all of their life savings on paper straws, only to learn that the toxins in paper straws are even worse than those in plastic straws. Our congregation is actively distributing straws made of metal, bamboo, or repurposed Chinese drywall to those in need in an effort to remedy this catastrophe.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.